Alright, welcome all the hell the way back to the Tea Time with Tyler podcast. It's been so long since we've been gone, but there's been some stuff going on out in the world and we can't control that. But we're back, and I got Simone with me.
Hey y'all.
We are going to do a movie podcast today. We're going to focus on movies that we feel like don't get enough attention.
What movie is that, you ask?
Harriet the Spy, 1996 film starring Michelle Trachtenberg and Vanessa Lee Carter, directed by Bronwyn Hughes. I didn't really know who she was before watching this movie and researching it, but she was a first-time director. She's a female director, and that explains a lot, because this movie has a lot going for it that other movies in the time period didn't.
I had no idea it was a female director.
It was.
So, we're going to focus on Harriet the Spy. This movie is about a group of, you know, tweens. They're not teens. We would say tweens. They're navigating friendship together. They're living life. Things are happening around them. They're going to school. And we find Harriet. She's out here uncovering everything. She's a spy.
She is a spy. And it's interesting. It's not really something that I've ever really seen before in a movie where a character is so hardcore into something that interesting. She's really obsessed with her spy work. She carries her binoculars around.
Her notebook.
And the notebook reads private. She does not want anybody to see the things that she is writing down. And that's because they're just pure observations. Harriet is writing down exactly what she sees and speaking her thoughts on it. And whether or not that's good or bad, we will get to eventually. So, this is Harriet the Spy, Movie Friend Podcast. I don't know. Maybe we'll come up with a name later. What do you think we should call it, Simone?
Oh, that didn't work. I'm sorry. I couldn't think of anything.
I'm putting that in the bloopers. And Harriet's going to school. She's in, is it the sixth grade?
I believe it's so.
The sixth grade.
Summer is ending.
That's true. Her best friend, Sport, is a disenfranchised. He's poor. He has trouble buying groceries. His dad is a writer. Referenced to numerous times that he's like a starving artist. It's just a really sad situation. It's done quite that interestingly. It's a very nuanced approach to showing children that struggle to eat and, you know, are dealing with parents who may have good intentions but aren't necessarily paying attention, if you will.
Remember the where she dropped the dollar? You know, that's another
there is part a scene. Well, why don't you tell us about it?
Well, in one scene, Harriet observes, you know, Sport going to the grocery store. He doesn't have enough. So she, being the good friend that she is, as I'm using air quotes, decides that she'll drop a dollar, pretend that he was the one who dropped it, not her.
$6.75 You got it or not?
Hey, Sport. How you doing?
Hi. I said I dropped this outside.
Oh. Thanks. I gotta go.
And it's obvious in the scene that Sport knows that she's helping him, and it's unspoken. And it's such a nuanced performance. It's really a testament to these two actors, Michelle Trachtenberg and...
what's his name?
Whatever his name is. We'll look it up. But it's a nuanced performance from child actors who just are doing some really amazing acting.
Chris in the papers. Chris in the papers.
I did. So next we have Janie. You know, Harriet's female best friend. I'm happy to see that her parents are seen in the show or in the movie.
In the movie.
In the movie, her parents are seen while her mother is.
Her mother's seen, and it's just a negative stereotype in tropes. It's a trope that black children in movies never have parents, or they're not visible, they're not mentioned.
They're barely seen.
Stranger Things is a really good example where you see every single other child's parents, and you don't see Lucas, the black character's parents, until like season 3, because people were complaining about it. But in this movie, you see Janie's mom, and it's just pretty cool that she's there.
It's also interesting to know, back in the 90s, Janie was natural in this movie, which came out in 1996.
Wow.
Now,
and why is that important?
Me being natural in 2020, 1996, natural wasn't a mainstream thing. So the fact that this was done so early on...
So back in the 90s, basically, they
you had straight chemical relaxers or...
And that was just the norm. It was expected.
Yes. So the fact that this female director decided to portray her in her natural hairstyle, like, that's, I mean, and that's a big thing.
It's a big thing, and it looks great. And another thing that I noticed about Janie is that she is a woman in STEM. She's into science. When do we ever see a black character that's into science? When do we ever see a woman who's into science? Like, she is confident about it too. It's not like it's just some
thrown in thing where they mention, like, hey, she likes science, little known fact.
Exactly. It's not a passing thing that
it's a big part of her character
that gets dropped. It's basically her character. She loves science and she wants to be a scientist, and you get the vibe from her portrayal, from the brilliant Vanessa Lee Carter, that she's gonna be a scientist. I think Janie's a scientist right now.
I think so too. We'll have to look to see what she's doing.
Smell this. Ah, what is that? You like it? Wait, I mean you hate it. It's like something crawled up my nose and then died. Excellent. It's a sulfur-based alkaloid. I want it to chemically fuse with combustibles. And in English, that would mean...
Stink bomb.
Stink bomb. We tape it to the school air ducts, attach it to a timer, and 5 minutes before the school play starts, empty auditorium.
Hey. What are you girls doing?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Are you getting ready for your big stage debut?
Actually, Mrs. Gibbs, Janie and I were just talking about the school play, right, Janie?
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
Good. That's good. Janie, what is this supposed to be?
No, Mom, don't touch it.
It's an experiment with mold.
Oh, that's where my Veronica's Closet bra went to, huh?
Another big character played by Rosie O'Donnell is the character of Golly, and she is Harriet's nanny. And Harriet seems a little too old to have a nanny, if you ask me. It's kind of weird that she's even there, but it is shown later that Harriet is kind of a little rich white girl. Her parents are often not home, so they can afford to have this nanny basically raise their child. And this is shown so subtly through, it's shown, not spoken. This director, Bronwyn Hughes, really did a lot and decided to show a lot with just pictures. She wasn't beating you over the head with any kind of extreme message, but there are a lot of messages in Harriet the Spy that I did not notice until I was older. One of them is that Golly could basically be Harriet's mom. She's with her more than the parents, and we get the vibe that Golly basically raised her. But Golly encourages the spy work, which is interesting. She encourages her to go out and learn and look at things and record things, and she is encouraging a positive hobby in Harriet, even though we find out that Harriet isn't necessarily doing things in the way that she should be. She's got a little bit of a biased reporting when it comes to her thoughts, and it's interesting that it's coming through the lens of a white character as well when we go back and talk about representation, because we do have a young white child judging everything around them. Then we find out that she's privileged. Her parents are rich. They have this two-story brownstone walk-up.
The home was very nice was on the inside. There was, you know, those artifacts. There was little, like...
It was two stories.
Well, you know how in 90s movies and shows, there was always, like, that cool bedroom that these tweens and teens with, like, the clear phone and, like, all this stuff. Her room was like that. Yeah. And you wanted her to be in her room when we were younger. Like,
right.
This movie was just, like, cool to us.
And they do something really cool that is, they show the inside of Sport and Janie's houses.
They did, over multiple times.
And they never once mention, hey, your house is smaller than mine, or hey, Harriet has this giant mansion, basically, but it's just something that's shown. Bronwyn Hughes is out here trying to teach the children of America about privilege, and we didn't notice it.
We didn't catch it till later.
That's one of the many reasons why we wanted to talk about Harriet the Spy, because a ton of that stuff is in there. Alright, so now we have the main players, and we are going to get into the story. So everything changes one day where Harriet has her journal. She is encouraged to go play rather than spy, and something happens.
And you know, that was that fateful day. She was like, oh, I can go play. Typically, you know, she's working now. She's spying. So she decided to go play. And on this fateful day, her private notebook was discovered on the ground, unprotected. And what happened? It was scooped up by Marion Hawthorne.
Who is, we forgot to mention, a minor rich character who also just assumes that everybody runs around horseback riding because she's able to. It's interesting because Marion Hawthorne is the trope of a normal rich kid. Harriet is not. Harriet does not appear to be a rich kid, and yet she is.
So they're both rich, but both on unequal playing grounds.
Basically, yeah. It's like Harriet is rich and she doesn't know she's rich, which is just as problematic. Marion knows she's rich. She's just a snob. So what happens when Marion finds the journal?
All the secrets come out. And
Jinx.
The only thing more pathetic than being Marion Hawthorne is wanting to be Marion Hawthorne.
Rachel.
Jealous. Jealous. It's pure jealousy.
You give that back now.
Looks like there's something in here for everyone.
You heard her, Mary. Give it back before I pound you into the cement.
Ooh, I'm so scared. Hey, maybe there is something in here for you.
Janie really creeps me out. I wonder if she'll grow up to be a total nutcase?
A nutcase?
Hey, her best friend. That's her best friend. Beth? I wish someone would kick Beth Ellen. Laura. Laura Peters. Her face looks totally pinched.
Hey. Oh.
If I were the boy with the purple socks, I'd hang myself. Hit something else.
Cut it out, Marion.
Oh, maybe there is something in here for Sport.
No.
Sport.
Shut up.
Fine, then. 10. I'll read it right out loud so everybody can hear.
No! Sport is so poor, he can't even afford food. Why can't his father just get a real job? Oh, and get this as well. One day, I had to pretend he dropped a dollar just so he can afford some milk and bread. Oh. Ooh, harsh.
It's unfortunate because these are her best friends, and we discover what Harriet really thinks about her so-called best friends and associates and classmates. Like, these are her peers. These are the people she's with. I mean, we all assume things, but,
right.
You know.
And basically what she's been doing is she's been going around and observing people and judging them based on her observations. And I don't think that she's doing this consciously. And that's what's interesting about the movie is that she's going around and writing down everything she sees. But since it's coming through her lens, as a young white child, she is writing down a biased opinion. So when she talks about Janie, she doesn't say Janie is going to grow up to be a brilliant scientist because she sees Janie as her friend. She assumes that Janie can never do that and it's just some random dream that she has and she'll never do it. And that's not something you want your friend to see.
Well, it's like in the clip where they start reading the diary or the journal out loud and she's like, I think she's a psychopath. Isn't that what she said?
Yes, and that's another thing that I did notice is that when Harriet is writing it down and we're getting her internal monologue, what she's writing down in her internal monologue is not what gets read later. So what gets read later is slightly different, and again, she's showing us stuff and not telling it. It means that Harriet, to her, and to the audience, us, is seeing one thing, but she doesn't realize when it gets into the hands of the people that she's talking about, it can be harmful, and that's important. Nobody is teaching these kinds of lessons in movies. Nickelodeon was honestly killing it with this movie, and I cannot believe that they did not hire this director to make 10 more.
Right, maybe it was just too... They let her do it, and they were like, okay, cool. Like,
yeah.
I just think it could have been done again, like another... Not this movie, but like another movie with...
That was just different.
Yes, and she should continue making movies, I think.
So essentially, Harriet is alienated from her friend group because they find out that she's been talking about them and saying all these terrible things, and she is on her own. On top of that, Harriet's nanny, Golly, gets fired.
That was a big scene. That was rough.
What do you want to talk about what happened?
Well, Golly took Harriet out for a night on the town for dinner and a movie with her boyfriend, with Golly's boyfriend. Now, in the 90s, going out to a dinner and a movie, first of all, you do that like once every couple months. Nobody was able to go out to... My family wasn't going out to,
to
dinner.
It was a special
and a movie.
Treat.
Yes, it was kind of like, okay, we got paid. Bills are good. You know, let's go have a dinner and a movie.
Right.
So, and of course, cell phones weren't out then. So, you know, they couldn't call and check in on Harriet.
Yeah.
So, Golly takes her. You know, they go have fun, go to the movies, come back home. Her parents are waiting for her. They were upset. They were yelling. Well, the mother was.
Right. Right. Exactly. And that's a good point to make, that the mother was doing all of the yelling.
She flew off the handle.
And that's another trope in movies, that basically the female mom character is the one that's the
unstable,
a shrew, and that the dad gets to be the fun, passive one. And that's kind of a trope that we're going with here in this movie, but I do think that the director is aware and is commenting on the trope rather than just mistakenly using it. Because she's dealing with all of these other subjects, I have to assume that she kind of knew that the way the mom was coming off, and is pointing it out rather than... She's trying to shine light on a poor characterization. Because later on you hear the parents arguing, and basically the dad can fly off the handle and be a jerk behind closed doors when no one's around. He's the one that's yelling when Harriet isn't around. He's the one that's yelling when no one can hear. But in public, the mom has to bear the brunt of all of that relationship work. It's like she has to deal with punishing Harriet. She has to deal with basically being the mean one.
Do I try to interfere with your bookkeeping? My business is comedy. That's what I do. I'm funny. I'm the funny guy.
Yes, you are.
They're the money guys.
Okay, Slippery. Bath time's over. Come out with your hands up.
But I just got in.
Oh, sure. I believe that one. Let's see your fingers prune, girl.
Talk to the hand, because the face ain't gonna listen.
He asked me to come up with something new, something fresh. You read it. It
yes.
was fun. It was the funniest script we've had all.
Oh, yeah? I want to sing opera, but I can't, so I don't. That downstairs is, well, your dad has a high-pressure job.
Golly gets fired for taking Harriet to the movies because the parents didn't know where she was at. In addition, I feel like they really judge Golly's boyfriend because they look at him basically like, who the hell are you? And with some understanding, I do get how it would be weird if you pulled up to see your kid with someone you didn't know. However, it seems as if Golly's been with them since Harriet was a baby. And if that's true, you should trust the judgment of the person that is in your employ. If you trust them to take care of your kid, they're not going to put your kid in danger after 13 years. It's just unrealistic. They fly off the handle, basically.
And Golly decides, you know, it's time to go. And she made that decision and left Harriet, and she had to cope with that, you know, being on her own.
Right.
Are you gonna go be some other kid's nanny now?
And love them more than you? Never. Remember, in my life, in this world, there will always only be one Harriet. Now get back to work. You've lost nearly an entire day on your notebook.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter? Did I hear you say it doesn't matter? Because I thought I heard you say it doesn't matter, but Harriet wouldn't say that, would she? Now come on. Just because you're on your own doesn't mean the world stops turning, or that there are no more fascinating people to observe and fill your notebooks with. That's your job, Harriet. That's your job for life. And when you're all grown up, and you sell your first novel, I'll be first in line at that bookstore, getting my autographed copy.
Wow. I'm not gonna cry.
Nah, it's okay to cry, but whatever you do, don't laugh. No, Harriet, I will not tolerate laughter as I leave. No. You remember, a good spy can get in there and fight.
So we get Golly, and she exits the picture. Golly was a big source of fun for
wisdom.
Harriet. She was her biggest confidant. She took her to amazing places.
Her parents weren't doing that. So let's, I mean...
We can talk about the art garden.
Oh, the garden.
What about that art garden?
That was like one of the... We all wanted to play in that garden when we saw this movie.
It's a highlight of the film where Golly basically takes Janie. She takes other kids,
and
too.
And sport. Janie and sport.
Is she getting paid to watch the other two kids? Absolutely not. But she does it anyways because... She's a good person. She wants these kids to learn and grow. And will they? Won't they? We'll find out on the next chapter of Harriet the Spy, The Analysis by Simone and Tyler. Another thing that I really noticed is the soundtrack. This movie has not only the most interesting soundtrack of any movie that I can think of, but just the sound design, because from scene to scene, there's always some little, like, weird jazz in the background that's like, like, through the whole thing, and I really...
And it went with their movements, and it went with their body language. It was just, it was well done.
Bronwyn Hughes synced up the movie to the soundtrack so well, to where certain actions and certain events are predicated with such a huge amount of instrumentation, like Harriet falls to the ground, and all of these tubas and like trumpets and saxophones come in and have this like big swell of music. It's really interesting.
Let's not forget that Eartha Kitt was in this movie.
Yes, Eartha Kitt
plays... May she rest in peace.
Plays a woman that Harriet breaks into her home. Can we talk about... One of the flawed moments of Harriet, and we're shown this as a child, and it goes over your head. Watching this as an adult, Harriet is reckless. Not only is she judging people unfairly, but she breaks into an elderly woman's home. You want to talk about that?
Well,
she crawls up the vent.
She did, and then she was caught. You know, she stayed in there.
Harriet breaks into a woman's home one day. That woman is Eartha Kitt, and she's just some random eccentric character that we're unsure
of. Well, I think she's an actress, and one of those... Well, I think she was portrayed as an actress.
Maybe she was an ex-actress.
I think so.
Maybe she has a lot of money. I think
she's supposed to be playing herself.
Now, that's interesting.
So... She breaks in, and she's caught, and they just throw her out. You know, she gets tossed out, like the garbage.
And it's almost like a...
But didn't get into any real trouble.
It's almost like a breaking point for her, because she had never been caught before. She says a good spy never gets caught.
That is true.
And she gets caught by Eartha Kitt's maid. So now that Golly's gone, and Harriet has no friends, she's getting caught for the first time. She's going along her normal spy route, and everything's different. A man before who had numerous cats that was so happy with his cats and loved them and was just listening to jazz, making bird cages, and petting and feeding his cats. Well, the animal control department comes and takes all of his cats away from him. So he is depressed, and his depression coincides with the feelings that Harriet's feeling. And again, they are showing us this and not telling us this. Nobody says Harriet's dealing with depression, but Harriet is dealing with depression.
Yeah, they don't say it, but it's unconscious.
It's in the background, yes, rather than the foreground.
Feelings about yourself and your maturing mind.
Everything's the same as when Golly was here. It looks the same. It smells the same. But there's this tiny hole inside me that wasn't there before. It's like a splinter in your finger. Only this one's right above my stomach.
Harriet? Are you okay?
Uh-huh. Something's different. No cats? How can Harrison Withers not have a billion cats around? Finally nailed him. I will always remember that face. That's the face you make when you really lose something.
But looking at this, it's funny watching this in 2020 as adults. Like, it's like, wow, even the way that they portrayed depression in younger people, depression in, she was really young. Like, she went to a psychiatrist and this was seen in a good light, not as a negative, you know, situation.
Right.
Well, what do we do now?
We can do anything you like.
What am I supposed to do?
How about a game? Do you play chess?
Gully was gonna teach me, but...
Gully? Who's he?
Just somebody. You sit here and play with this stuff all day?
Don't you have toys at home?
Yeah, but I'm 11. You stink. What are you doing?
Just taking notes.
Are they the mean, nasty kind? Or the regular kind.
Why?
Because I'm just telling you, it's tough getting away with a nasty kind these days.
Thanks for the advice.
Nobody ever takes your notebook away from you, I bet.
Tell you what, how about I give you a notebook? Would you like that?
Yeah, sure. This guy's not bad. Definitely one of those people Gully says deserves a closer look. At least he knows the value of a good notebook.
Harriet. Hmm. It's time to go.
Can I keep the notebook?
I'll have to talk to your parents about that.
Basically, her behavior comes erratic. She starts throwing things. She starts not being able to deal with her parents, which...
Well, let's not forget the list that she created.
Well, in addition to her parent... So Gully's gone, right? Her parents were already negligent. So when Gully leaves, like, what? They're just watching her even less? So she's just alone. But yes, during a moment of feeling alone and feeling hate and anger in this world from not having any friends, Harriet creates a list. Let's talk about the list. Now... Because these things are wrong. She seeks revenge in the worst possible way.
And you know, some of them got away okay, like the girl with the locker where she just like scratched her eyes out.
Some of them are like, you ruined my picture. And then another one's like,
you cut my hair. She cut that girl's pony, that girl's pigtail. Never forget.
You cannot cut someone's hair off. And if she did, she would be suspended. Tell me why she didn't get suspended.
I don't know. There was no repercussions for that. Well, remember she pulled the boy who was always putting together them sticks. He was always putting together them.
Well, that was another example of something that was not that big of a deal. His
sticks kept tumbling down.
He can build them right back up. But, you know, Sport, he gets kind of humiliated.
Oh, yeah. That was a big thing.
When Harriet and Sport, who have a platonic friendship, they're not... This isn't a movie that has romance in it.
No.
It's a sex-free movie. I mean, it has children, but you would be surprised how many child narratives force some kind of relationship where there shouldn't be one or doesn't need to be one. There's no relationship in this movie. There's three friends that love each other. And it's really interesting to show something like that so early in the 90s when there's nothing else like it going on. But essentially, Harriet and Sport are alone. Harriet learns that Sport takes care of all of the responsibilities in his house. He does the books, which means he pays the bills. He shops. He cooks. He cleans.
And he tried to explain that to Harriet in that one scene, and she was just like, I hate money. Remember when she said she hated money? And he was like, what did he say?
I've got the exact quote. He said, you'd like it a lot more if you didn't have any. So we already have the script, the dialogue. We have people spitting wisdom here. Like, you would like money a lot more if you didn't have any. And nobody is screaming that at Harriet, but people are saying it to her, and she is privileged and she does not take it in. But essentially, you know, Sport is performing a traditionally feminine role of being the mother of himself. He's the mother in his household.
He's the breadwinner.
He...
Well, I won't say that. He's not making any money, but... Well, his father is supposed to be the father figure, and...
He's not being a father. We see him sleeping a lot and goofing around a lot, and Sport is doing all the cleaning. So there's a scene where Sport has, like, a little maid's outfit on to be funny and to defy gender roles, and... You know, he's just having fun being himself. I don't think there's anything deep to it, but Harriet knows that if she shows this picture that she has of him dressed up in his little maid outfit to other people, that it will be humiliating for him. So she does that. She posts this picture all around school, which is cyberbullying.
It is, in its simplest form. Like, she truly, and you know, she photocopied that photo and pasted it everywhere and taped it up.
Like, how is she not getting expelled and banned from this school for life? We don't don't know, but white kids get away from everything, so.
That's true.
And then what does she do to Janie?
Messed up her experiment.
Messed up her science experiment and poured something in there. So but again, that could have been a deadly explosion.
It could have been. It could have been something poisonous that if emitted, like, killed the whole school. Like,
but Harry didn't think about
it. She didn't think about the consequences of her actions amongst other people.
So yeah, so she goes from person to person seeking revenge, and essentially she comes down to Marion Hawthorne, who is her nemesis, and she tells Marion, your father doesn't love you, which is messed up. It's... You don't tell people that. You don't know that, first of all. Second of all, even if you did know that, you don't tell people that. And she does it in a way that is so conniving. It's not like she was just, you know, having a heart-to-heart.
She brought up that story in front of everybody in the bathroom when they were, remember, it was all the girls were in the bathroom, and
she was basically like, your dad didn't show up because he doesn't love you, and you know it, your whole family knows it, and you're an embarrassment. And it's like, it's such a harsh scene for a movie. These scenes are hard to watch.
They are. Like, looking back, I was like, oh. So, for children, like, they were pretty aggressive.
Harsh. Pretty harsh. And then as a result of all of this revenge, the slighted kids start the Spy Catchers Club. Okay, so essentially in the next part of the story, we have the classmates all start a Spy Catchers Club, and they are bound and determined to stop Harriet from spying. And they're, in a quite a frightening manner, stalking her around town and beating trash cans and whatnot. They have rollerblades. They look like a gang of misfits, and it's terrifying. It scared me as a child.
It was kind of...
To have your friends turn on you in such a way is unsettling.
It was, because they were real serious about it. They created that clubhouse, and let's discuss the actual, like, building a clubhouse. Now, where were they getting all of these... these boards and these...
This is an industrial movie. There's a lot of industrial work going on. Like when Harriet makes that big tower to get up to
sport... climb up to his window.
First of all, why didn't Harriet just use the front door? Second of all, why was there enough trash lying around for her to have to make a... I'm losing it. Harriet has to make a trash tower to go see sport, and she's dangling out of the window.
He didn't notice until, like, he was like, oh, hey, Harriet. And yeah. She's like about to fall.
And that just ties in back into how reckless she is. Like, she is not a safe, completely morally sound character. She's dangling from buildings for no reason. Like, her parents maybe do have some reason to be worried about her if we do see her, you know, dangling out of a four-story walk-up.
Well, this
in the bad neighborhood.
Well, this is after Golly left, I think, so.
Everything ends after Golly goes. Okay, so at this point in the movie, Golly returns. Of course, in any 90s movie, you have a swell of emotion, the orchestra, it builds up, you see Golly, and then everything seems like it's gonna be okay, but Golly has some lessons for Harriet. She's gonna have to change her behavior if she wants her life to change.
And one of her biggest pieces of advice was, sometimes it's okay to lie.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and that is not something, again, you will see in any other movie. Nickelodeon is just, they're out here talking differently, but sometimes it's okay to lie. Golly explains that sometimes it is okay for you to not tell the complete truth as you see it, because you will hurt someone's feelings, even if that is how you see them, even if that's your observation, even if that's your first thought. You don't need to write all those down. You don't need to speak them. Like, they can hurt people. Your thoughts and feelings can hurt people. So sometimes you have to understand that you're gonna need to filter yourself in life. You're gonna need to take accountability for your actions, and you're gonna need to listen, learn, and grow.
Well, that's something that a lot of people who are our age still don't know how to do, so they miss this movie. They should go back and rewatch and watch it.
And now that is true.
But you can't go. I mean, we need you. Harriet would never stand for it. Please, won't you reconsider?
You know, it's not about what happened outside tonight. It really isn't.
But golly,
I think it's time. I really do. Harriet can take care of herself now, so she should.
But Harriet's just
a little girl.
You know, it's the right thing. It's the right thing for all of us. For me, for you, and for Harriet.
Sure?
Yeah. I am. The time has come, the walrus said.
To talk of many things.
Of shoes and ships and sealing wax.
Of cabbages and kings.
And why the sea is boiling hot.
And whether pigs have wings.
And that's why we wanted to talk about it, because Harriet the Spy is a rarity. It's a rarity. It's a tour de force film.
In the 90s, nonetheless.
Like, even if you get into, like, the colors, for instance.
The clothing.
The color palette in this movie, crazy. It not only kind of looks like a 50s, like, noir movie, but it also looks like an extremely 90s movie. We have Harriet in the beginning in yellow. She's got yellow and a small amount of red when she's doing great. She's loving life.
Well, remember... Okay, so... another symbolism I noticed. Remember when they started reading the notebook and she had on that red sweater?
It was
the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah, and I mean, like, can you blame them at that point? Right when she gets caught and everybody's reading her journal, she is in all red.
Yes.
When Golly leaves for the last time, she's in all red. When there's this huge blow up from the parents, Golly is in head to toe. She's got a red beret, red jacket, red shirt. Like, it's... they're just doing a lot of cool stuff with colors. When Harriet's depressed, everything is yellows, muted tan and brown. Even it seems like the filters and the lenses change when Harriet's depressed.
Well, and then remember when the blue paint incident. Why was the paint blue? What could we take away from why the paint was blue?
I honestly think that scene serves as a point of breaking the simmering tension that's building up in the plot between all of these characters.
I would have to agree.
So up until this point, it's just been Harriet saying terrible stuff, people seeking revenge, and then her seeking revenge on them. It's just revenge back and forth and back and forth, between friends even. And it's really hard to watch because everybody has been a sixth grader at war with their own friends. Like that moment...
it was terrible.
That moment when you find yourself at war with your own friends, it's such a relatable moment. But there's a scene where Harriet is just really
lost.
Attacked. Well, she's feeling lost, of course.
They start trying to break down her character, I feel like.
Well,
they
start with passing notes that she
doesn't
see. Yes,
and where the note said... the note, remember the note was like, Harriet smelled or whatever. So she went to go bathe in the women's bathroom.
Yeah.
And as a young person, like as a child, like that's... bullying, like that's
it's something that you would never forget. I mean, there's stuff that people told me in the sixth grade that I will never forget. So it is showing, like,
things
you make fun
people of
a kid and say something about them, they're gonna believe it and they're never gonna forget it. It's such an impressionable time period. I really think it's important that they showed the sixth grade because they're entering a new level.
Yeah, they're
of
getting out
school.
Of elementary school, number one. They're going into middle school.
Yeah. Essentially, everybody's painting in this scene in class. People start passing around paint, and you're unsure of what's going to happen. And
I just noticed.
The tension is building. At this point, you can start to hear everyone's thoughts. Everybody's whispering. And then all of a sudden, they dump a bucket of paint on Harriet. And it is one of the hardest scenes to watch in a movie ever. At that point, everyone swarms her with napkins. The music slows down. It's crazy. Like, they're dabbing those napkins all over her face. She's screaming for them to stop. They're not.
That was intense. A really intensive scene. But you know what I also remember? Remember when they were reading Hamlet, remember?
Yeah.
And then while she was...
you have a point.
Symbols.
There. They were definitely playing around with some literary symbols. So you're right about the Scarlet Letter, because she goes into a book later and it's like witches burning and stuff.
Yes.
She felt as if she were in some sort of...
being...
the crucible or what have you.
Yes.
Sometimes you have to lie. I just think that's a really good message. And I think like one of the final messages of the movie is don't judge a book by its cover, which is one of the most basic, one of the most human messages ever.
It is, because she's, you know, it's her perspective. Her perspective is always, she only sees these people maybe, like, the time frame isn't very long.
No.
So how do you get a real perspective from 10 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever?
And it's such a huge narrative now, but not so much then, that you can't just look at someone's race, look at someone's class stature, look at someone's
finances,
interest,
their income,
look at someone's appearances, look at someone's anything, and judge them with just that.
Yet people do it every day,
and
all
yet
the time.
People do it every day. And Harriet the Spy in 1996, directed by a woman, starring a girl, was telling us this, and we were entertained,
but we didn't know what we were being entertained by.
We did
during that time.
And there's actually a scene towards the end where we find that Harriet goes back to her normal spy route. All of these places where she went before, where we only saw a part of the picture, we now see the bigger picture. And she realizes that sometimes when you look closer, you lean in and you listen to people, you get more of a perspective. You get more of a picture. You don't just see them through your view. You see it through a wider worldview, if you will.
We didn't discuss the Hong family, remember? They were in the very beginning.
Yeah.
She saw a family going through different things in their own, in the home, that other people weren't supposed to see. She walked
right.
it. She...
She was judging them based on a personal family issue. If someone had come into her house while she was having her personal family issues, it would look real judgmental too. But we didn't do that. She's just judging this family based on their fight. And then promptly in the next scene, she's fighting with her parents. So I think they were trying to compare and contrast that she judges other people for these things and doesn't realize she is just as judgmental and has just as many problems as they do. She's just not.
She just can't see them.
She's not focusing inward. And towards the end, she decides to focus inward. She gets a job at the sixth grade newspaper. Unanimously votes. And I think that's pretty cool that a character could admit that they were wrong and make up for it. Like, is she perfect? Yeah. No, Harriet is not a perfect character. I think in Disney movies and in Nickelodeon wasn't about this, but in Disney movies, other kid movies, Pixar movies, they want the characters to be perfect. They never want them to
have flaws or be shown as having weaknesses, I guess.
Yes, and Harriet is likable. She's lovable. That Michelle Trachtenberg is killing it playing this character. The writing is amazing. But when you look at Harriet, Harriet's not a nice person. She's judgmental, she's rude, she's annoying, she is a spoiled brat, essentially, and she has no place to be judging other people before looking inward and judging herself. And through therapy, even, like, I can't believe in 1996, but through therapy and through some guidance from her nanny, not her parents, she learns how to be a better person. And I think that is why I am a better person today, because I saw this film and saw that's not how you treat your friends. That's not how you treat your family. You don't hurt the people you love. You hold them close to you and believe in them. And the movie, Harriet the Spy, closes out with a fun dance scene. Who doesn't love that?
The dance scene was...
to James Brown. Like, the soundtrack is banging.
Get the soundtrack. Look it up.
It's on YouTube. Tito Puente. It's all people of color. There's not a lot of white folks on the soundtrack. I really wish that this guy had done more stuff. He is really into jazz, Middle Eastern music. His father was a European classical musician. He began to study classical piano at the age of 5. Did the soundtrack to Harriet the Spy. It's amazing. It's like
the soundtrack is unlike any other soundtrack I've heard.
It's super jazzy. Costume designers did a really good job at just capturing the feel of the 90s while making it wholly unique to the movie.
They really did. Like, they weren't showing a lot of skin, but it was still... Yeah. The girls weren't wearing, like, tank tops and a bunch of, like... It was tastefully done. I mean, they were kids, but...
I wonder where it was filmed, because it seems like they're cold. Like,
it did seem like it, because they were running around in leaves and stuff, and it just seemed like it was a cold... I see what you mean.
New York, maybe, perhaps.
I never looked at where it was filmed. I guess we should look that up.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's Harriet the Spy. I hope you got a lot out of this, like we did. It's a really touching movie. I know it sounds like, I'm not going to watch that. I'm not going to go back and watch a kid's movie. Go back and
watch it. We recommend you do.
Give it a chance. We're going to keep doing these. We have a lot of fun movies on our roster. We have Josie and the Pussycats.
Matilda,
directed by Danny DeVito. We have Smiley Face, other weird movies that we feel like don't get enough attention, that we love, that we quote, that we feel like inspired us. And
as artists and entrepreneurs,
as adults, as people, we like movies, and we typically like movies that...
An eclectic blend of movies too. We don't care for those mainstream, like, we'll talk about mainstream movies, that's fine. Who doesn't love a mainstream movie? But yeah. I like, you know, Sundance films and things like that.
Yeah, we're movie snobs.
Yeah, kind of.
But thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. We're gonna get on up out of here. Our next movie is gonna be Matilda, directed by Danny DeVito.
I know y'all remember Matilda.
Matilda is wonderful. It's about a girl with powers, so
stay tuned.
Look forward to that.
Be safe.
Be safe out there. Please be safe.
That's all we ask.
Whatever you do, be safe. And we were safe today. We've been safe, and you need to be safe, and everybody will feel safe if you're safe.
Till next time.
Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye, everyone. Goodbye, everyone. Nana, sa huevo y bruja, araña pelubí, ca. Nana, sa huevo y bruja. What would you do if your son was at home? Crying all alone on that bedroom floor, cause he's lonely. What? And the only way to feed him is to sleep with a man for a little bit of money, and his daddy's gone. So we're smoking rock now, in and out of lockdown. I ain't got a job now. So for you, this is just a good time, but for me, this is what I call life. Ooh. And then there's that part, the end verse. What is that end verse where he completely flips the narrative? We don't need that last verse. Like, okay, so this song is through the whole thing. They're talking about, like, how hard it is to be a stripper, and that the father of the son isn't present, and it's terrible, and life is hard for her. And this is all sympathetic. And then we get to the end, and the man speaks up.
He's like, girl, you ain't the only one with a baby.
What? Excuse me, sir? Girl, you ain't the only one with a baby. That's no excuse to be living all crazy. Like, that we need to petition to have this verse removed. Simone, you know what he says? He says, hold up. The music stops. It goes,
hold up.
What would you do? Get up off my feet and stop making tired excuses. Like, no, sir. No. We're not. We support these strippers. We endorse these strippers. And we support dancers. And we're not going to judge them. Like, they're out here trying to live. And you're over here talking about, hold up, what would you do? Get up off my feet and stop making tired excuses. Well, sir, some people, you know, need some extra help. Some people weren't born with privilege, like Harriet the Spy. And that's how we tie it back, full circle. So we want that, we want the whole verse stricken from the record.
Remove it.
Absolutely stricken. Hold up. You're not the only one with a baby. That's no excuse to be living all crazy. Stop it. Bye, y'all.
Bye.